Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt, and this is Rolling Stone Music Now. And we are just about at the end of 2017. We actually made it to the end of the year. And there was, in addition to all the other wonderful things that happened this year, there was a bunch of great music that came out. And Rolling Stone has put out its top 50 best albums of 2017, and I thought maybe we'd go through some of those albums and maybe you'd discover some new music that you like on there, or new music to hate, whatever. And I have with me in the studio Brittany Spanos. Hey, Brittany.
Hey.
And John Dolan.
Hey.
And we might be joined in a few minutes by Chris Weingarten. We'll see. First of all, just like we did last year, and it seems like I can't believe that was a whole year ago, we started out last year talking about the general trends, like what was happening in music this year, what you take away from the top 50. It's almost easier to extrapolate from the top 20 because that's where we're not just hitting us, we're hitting the sort of general public. They tend to be bigger stuff for the most part. So what are you taking away from the general kind of direction of music this year? I'll start with you, Brittany.
I feel like this is one of those kind of rare years where it doesn't feel like a single genre is totally dominating, especially when it comes to really excellent, solid albums. I would say in like the single sphere, it's been very dominated by rap.
For sure.
Very dominated by a certain viral level of rap music. But I would say with all the albums that we've seen this year and that just taking a look at our list, every single genre really hit a great stride with really strong performances by some of their biggest artists in all those genres.
You know, I think you actually made a really important point, which is there's an incredible split between sort of what was popping singles-wise, mm-hmm. just what you heard on the radio, what people were talking about, which was overwhelmingly in part because of changes in the way that the charts are determined, been like sort of viral hip-hop, and younger and younger and younger, literally, until you get Lil Pump, who was just born,
yeah.
you know, who was just came out of the womb and started rapping about Gucci Gang.
And a rare year where all the big singles, the biggest singles are new artists, or the most memorable singles of the year have mostly been majority new artists, where we're getting a lot of veteran artists kind of coming through with their like big albums this year.
Right. That's the pop charts. And then here we have our albums of the year, which are sort of in, and it's not just ours, it's really everyone's sort of critical take on the best mm-hmm. albums, don't bear us a ton of resemblance to what was popping on the pop charts. You know, I think our biggest representation of that moment is Migos, who actually stepped up and made not just a bunch of great singles and seemingly like 10,000 features, but they made a great album called Culture. And I think that's going to be the test for a lot of the sort of viral rappers of the moment. Can they step up and make an entire album that's yeah. great? You know, I do love that the first artist we mentioned in the Top 50 Albums podcast is Lil Pump, who did not make one of the best anythings of this year. But he's very much on my mind. Is Lil Pump on your mind?
Yeah, not as much as I would hope on a day-to-day basis. Or maybe as he needs to be on a day-to-day basis.
Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang.
I feel like one of the things that kind of unifies our albums list, at least, is a sense of, if you go to the top 50, four of the albums have the word American in the title. Mm-hmm. And
damn.
I know, isn't that? And it's a sense, I think, of this kind of shared conversation we're having about really our personal and national trauma that's going on right now. I think it's come up a lot. I think in every genre, whether it was R&B or whether it was country or whether it was indie rock or whether it was hip hop, there was a sense of sadness and starting to process that. And in different kinds of ways, you had the Kesha albums about a very real personal trauma. It's not metaphorical. It's not about America. The Jason Isbell album and the Margot Price albums were both about kind of the red state, kind of coming to terms with the life in sort of red state America post-Trump. The National album is more of kind of maybe about a middle class, kind of Brooklyn-y kind of sense of darkness and fear. Jay-Z sang about his own personal failings on his record. It seemed like Randy Newman sang about historical, you know, he sang about the Cuban Missile Crisis, he sang about the Scopes trial, he sang about the modern residents of all these things. The LCD Sound System, the same thing, taking this old fun dance music from 15 years ago and making it dark and kind of, it seemed like that was kind of something that came throughout all the genres that showed up here.
Even yeah. Lana Del Rey
yeah, that's right.
was yeah. like, had thoughts about America all of a sudden. Well, thoughts about America besides I like making out with old dudes in front of the American flag. Like,
yeah.
that was her previous thought about America.
Well, it seems like yeah. if you didn't do it, you were like kind of copping out, which if you think about it, that's the way music was, say, 10 years ago or 20 years ago. It would just be inconceivable that it would be like this now.
I guess the counter argument, and we may have gone there before is our friend Katy Perry, who attempted to address all this and in a way that, that people didn't dig. So
she, well, she's the exception that proves the thing. I mean, she was the worst example. It's like she had to do it. It was a disaster. You don't, you know, some people don't do it. Don't try it, but everyone did.
Katie's mistake was no American in the title.
That was, only she would have called it, yeah.
And even Harry Styles, and that gets to our singles list, but I mean, Sign of the Times, what a super relevant feeling song. And I may have even said this on the show before, but I'll just keep saying it. For me, that's the song when they do the recap of all the horrible shit that happened in 2017, they're going to play that song over it.
Totally.
Let's hope there's not one more terrible thing that happens in
December. It ends with a mushroom cloud going off. Like, yeah.
It's the sign of the top. Yeah, that's how I picture this year, basically. But it is a thing where, on one hand, you have the relevance. On the other hand, you have not only Taylor, but Lorde, mm-hmm. who made a spectacular album that has very little sort of social relevance, yeah. you know? So it's like, if you're not going to dig into the now, you better just make a really great album.
Yes.
You know, and I think in her case, she did, right?
I totally agree. I mean, that was a record that seemed to take this, you know, grandeur and huge soundscapes of electronic music and boil it down to the most intimate personal, like a whispered thing in the corner of a big dance club or whatever on every song. And it was a huge leap forward for her as an artist, you know, going beyond just kind of, I'm a high school kind of writing poetry kind of thing, into something just more timeless and eternal that ties back to even music before rock in the sort of torchy kind of quality of it. It just is a great statement. It's our number two. We should maybe say like where these fell, but that was number two.
Yeah. And that, you know, we may dig deeper into the top 20 a little later, but no, absolutely. Lorde was number two. Kendrick, it's not a countdown. We already released this. People, you can Google it right now. There's no spoilers. We can jump around. Number one was Kendrick Lamar, and there was a lot of debate between Kendrick and Lorde. I have a feeling, Brittany Spanos, that you might have argued for Lorde in that.
Yeah. Love Lorde. I mean, Kendrick is one of our greatest artists right now, especially, I mean, the hot streak of all of his albums has been unprecedented in within the last, like, 15 years, I would say. But I think that when it comes down to it, Melodrama feels not only like a huge feat for this year, but it also feels like a career feat for an artist like Lorde. And so that's why that album is a personal favorite. But I'm very pleased with Damn being number one as well.
It was a tough one.
Yeah.
I will say we played around with Kesha mm-hmm. as number one.
Yeah.
And I think that is an album that has a little bit of trouble reaching the very people who might like it the most, which is rock fans.
Yeah, mm-hmm. totally.
Actually, if you have to sort of free your mind. I remember when I said in my Kesha cover story, just offhand, that she made one of the year's best albums, and people on Twitter went nuts as if I was insane.
Yeah.
Because it's this weird mix of rockism, but then you have to flip it because she's being a little rockist in what she did with her album, but they don't even understand that she could do that. And, mm-hmm. and it's ridiculous. It's both kind of sexist, and it's also, yeah. it's very annoying to me. But it's, first of all, why is it inconceivable that Kesha can make one of the year's best albums? Why? Because she's a pop artist, because she wants to use autotune, because she's a woman? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I think for before this, her albums, though, great, were like almost self-consciously kind of trashy in a good way. And it's funny, you're right, if you go up to someone who doesn't follow music or follows it a little bit and go like, well, Lorde is number one, oh, that makes sense, Lorde sounds important, catch it just seems to seem tacky, when mm-hmm. in fact she made one of the most emotionally deep and records, and also kind of emotionally like interesting, where she's like going through this awful experience and coming out of it and like laughing, and you know, there's a sense of humor to the record that a lot of records kind of don't have in this kind of pretentious times of pop music. Plus, she's like you guys say, playing with all these genres, mm-hmm. going back to the 70s.
We should actually hear "Bastards" from the Kesha record in a minute, just to illustrate what's going on here. But one of the reasons we looked at Kesha as number one, which by the way it was not, again it was number four, was because it was so surprising. It was this artist that people refused to take seriously mm-hmm. and had an obviously huge up against the odds thing when she was in this terrible battle with her producer, who she makes, you know, horrifying allegations against, and she had to start over because said producer was providing the backbone of her production sound. And here she triumphs and makes this brilliant album that it is a pop album. There's a lot of pop going on it, but there's also, you know, she has songs with the Eagles of Death Metal, mm-hmm. you know, and she has this opening track, Bastards. Let's hear it. And this says it all about the difference between old Kesha and new Kesha.
I got too many people. Da, 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 da. Go
If you thought you didn't like Kesha, you probably like Kesha now. Come on. It's amazing. Yeah. But that was a fun surprise. LCD Sound System was not a fun surprise because you'd expect them to make a great record. And then to jump to the bottom 10, the bottom 20, mm-hmm. there were a lot of surprises. There were things that I had not heard that were really good.
What did you like?
Some other things I didn't like. I got to be honest with you. There's individual constituencies. That's the thing is people imagine that a publication like Rolling Stone, they think it's some one hive mind mm-hmm. that likes everything. And it's just not, it's just messier than that. There's people have their own tastes, and it's not just now, it's always been. There's always been these, John, you were talking about how people have dogs in the fight, and sometimes the dogs surface and they make their way onto the list.
I think as we get to the back of the list especially, we all kind of get our little stray or whatever, and like, you know, someone likes metal more than someone else, someone likes free jazz more than someone else, and like, you know, I don't think you can ever say, I, sitting here, or any of us, have the objective 50 albums in our head. It's like, of course, it's somewhat relative towards the end, and you have to make the case, and that's why these come with little write-ups that explain why they're good, and, you know, you try to do your best to sort of prove your point, but I can't think there's a record, there are any albums on here that you would not want to hear, mm-hmm. no matter what your taste is, and you might not love every one of them, but you're going to have things, you kind of have personal things you love.
Well, I really like this album by Open Mike Eagle, who's a rapper, and I guess from Chicago, and had a really jazzy melodic flow, and maybe we can hear something from that. It's Open Mike Eagle is the rapper, and he has an album called Brick Body Kids Still Daydream, which is really hard to say, and it's about a single housing project, the Robert Taylor Homes on Chicago's South Side, which was demolished in 2007, and it reminded me a little bit of Nas's debut, and just telling the story, really tight stories about one place and one time, and I had not encountered it till it popped up on the list, and I thought it was really cool. And we actually are being joined in the studio by Chris Weingarten. Hi, Chris.
Hi there.
Were you an advocate for Open Mike Eagle?
I absolutely was an advocate for Open Mike Eagle. I think it's really unique in that it mixes a historical reality with his own kind of comic book narrative and invented characters, and an examination of himself as well. So it really is like this this album that ties in the historical and the personal and the completely fantastical all in this very unique stew where you don't know where one thing ends and the other thing begins.
Let's hear something from Open Mike Eagle.
Don't call me naked, a rapper. My motherfucking name is Michael Eagle. I'm sovereign. I'm from a line of ghetto superheroes. I holler, I got something.
Then I also liked Songhai Blues.
Amazing band. Amazing band.
So that's Songhai, for anyone looking for this at home, Songhoy Blues. And they're sort of like ZZ Top if they were from Mali.
Yeah. I mean, and me standing for them is something, because I generally do not like any new rock music that comes out when it comes from a traditional guitar, bass, drums rock band. It personally does not do anything for me these days, but you know, these guys rip in a way that's classic and informed by a lot of current stuff, and you know, they shred. I love them.
It'd be cool to hear this song Sahara, which actually has Iggy Pop on it.
And his lyrics on that song are kind of talking heads, like David Byrne, like, you know, taking a big picture through a weird sideways angle, which I really love. He almost sounds like Byrne a little bit on the track, I feel.
So let's hear it. It's a really good one.
It's got a bad reputation in the developed nations, 'cause it's big and empty.
It sounds a little bit like it might be the theme to a new Netflix show, but the rest of the rest of the album is even more unique than that. I really liked it, so that was a great discovery. And I also realized that I like Chris Stapleton more than I was willing to previously admit. His From a Room Volume 1 is number 30, and he's really good. Although there is the first song on Chris Stapleton's From a Room Volume 1. It's called Broken Halo, I believe. So let's hear that opening track, and maybe we can recognize the chord progression.
Sing my Sarah, broken halos floating away
in field last night, and then they blew up his house too.
Anyway, it's the same song. But so good for. I liked it the first time. I like it the second time. It's really good. But it is literally the exact same chord progression as "Atlantic City" by Bruce Springsteen. That's totally cool. I liked it. But that was my. We're just going through my discoveries. So congratulations to Chris Stapleton. I hope you don't get sued. You can't. Good news. You cannot copyright a chord progression, and the melody's different. The J Sum album, Everybody Works. Do we have a big fan of that? Because I'm a fan of that.
I am too.
Yeah, and I think the most interesting revelation about J Sum is how much she loves Steely Dan.
Yeah.
It's this bedroom indie rock Steely Dan record, and there's something so amusing about that. And you know, something like One More Time, Please. I must admit I would have not figured that out as her influence until I read it, and then once you read it, you can't stop hearing it. But it's this perfectionist streak, a ton of other influences going on in that, but it's a cool record. What did you like about it?
I guess this what you just said, the sort of bedroom intimacy combined with this weird, it's not like slick, but liking that kind of music, like liking like Minute by Minute by the Doobie Brothers and Asia and stuff like that, and thinking it's or like and thinking it's like both funny but also good, and then also the fact that she just writes really good songs.
Well, let's hear that song I mentioned. And that sort of sounds like they played over a scene in like Riverdale, I guess. But yeah, we're going to music supervise all the shows as we do that. That's a free service we provide here. I want to jump back to number 50, which was Code Orange's Forever.
Very controversial entry in the Rolling Stone office. I can say it provided many arguments in the office.
So this is a very aggro album. I started to understand why you guys were pushing for it so hard after I got sort of past the first track. When I got to the more atmospheric stuff, the Nine Inch Nails influence and that kind of stuff, where it becomes more interesting than just a like thrashing. But tell me from your perspective why you pushed. So there was a hard push from both you and some other people.
Yeah, some other people in the office. Yeah. You know, like they, in the years since, say, you know, Converge's Jane Doe in 2001, you know, people have explored all these different variations of combining, you know, hardcore punk music and metal music in ways that are not only sort of seamless and natural, but unique and cool. In a year where Converge also released a great record, like these guys are really pushing boundaries and they're willing to put anything they want in the stew. And some of their stuff is like incredibly poppy. Some of their stuff is incredibly weird.
I didn't get to the poppy stuff. Where was the poppy stuff?
it's there. Like, you know, the songs which... Not the ones that the drummer doesn't sing are the poppier ones.
So let's hear this song "Kill the Creator" from that album a little bit and see why this is a controversial pick. Are we ready? Okay, let's go. This is a cool song.
That decrescendo, like, you know, like that is, you know, the slow decrescendo into the mosh part, the incredibly, you know, taut rhythm section. Like everyone is really tight. It's really razor sharp. It's not sloppy at all. It's a very controlled ugliness.
I think it would be a pretty good gym album, I have to say. I'm giving a set, but no, it's like, I mean, there's not a lot of stuff that's hitting that, pressing that button right now that's any good of the just fuck, you know, aggro awesome stuff. And I understand. I'm starting to really like it, actually. Well, it is funny.
Well, we dropped, you know, the top 20 metal records list is dropping next week, so you can
that'll hit that note. Yeah,
it'll hit that note 20 times.
20 times. So you're listening to Rolling Stone Music Now. We're talking about the top 50 albums of the year, or at least the ones we've decided are the top 50 albums of the year, and we'll be right back with a lot more.
our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
We're talking about the best 50 albums of 2017, or at least the ones Rolling Stone has decided are the best 50 albums of 2017. And we have in the studio Brittany Spanos, John Dolan, and Chris Weingarten. And in the break, Chris was talking about a sort of general trend. At the beginning, we were talking about some general trends, just pointing out that, as you put it, while a lot of the pop acts were making rock albums and a lot of the rock acts were making pop albums. I think that's a great point.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that divide has always been there, but, you know, we really held up, we really, in the office, like, love the Kesha record, love the Harry Styles record, because they sound like classic rock records.
Right.
And meanwhile, you know, all these people that used to be alternative rock icons are, like, glossing up their sound, creating these, like, weird dance records, and it's across the board. It's like Queens of the Stone Age got Mark Ronson. Beck went back to that kind of, you know, Midnight Vultures-y, you know, kitchen sink pop stuff. St. Vincent made a pop album, which is wild. Paramore made a glossy pop album, you know. Grizzly Bear made a synthy pop-ish record.
Well, ish. For them.
You know, and it's like, and then, you know, you look at who our pop stars are these days, it's, you know, it is bands like Fall Out Boy and Maroon 5. And if you look at who is selling and getting the acclaim and doing arena tours, like, in releasing critically acclaimed albums like rock bands, you know, it's Beyonce. And it's, you know, it's artists like that. So it's an interesting way that dynamic has shifted.
Before we go back to individual albums, what do we think of the year in Jack Antonoff, who has quite a number of albums in our top 20 he was involved with? What is it about Jack Antonoff, do you think, Brittany, that is lent himself to so many successful albums with women consistently this year? And whereas his own album is nowhere to be found on our list.
I think what was crucial for this year was Jack Antonoff stopped making songs that sounded like Jack Antonoff songs. I feel like he became a much better pop producer who worked better with the vocals of Lorde, of Annie Clark, of Taylor Swift, as opposed to trying to turn them into this, like, hive sound of what a Bleachers album would be. Like, I feel like the songs that he made on 1989 sounded too much like Jack Antonoff, where they sounded disconnected at times from Taylor Swift and who she can be and is as a writer, as a singer, as an artist in general. And I feel like what we heard this year was him really coalescing and working really well with these major, major female artists.
Let's start going down towards the sort of the top of the list. Number 28, Vince Staples, Big Fish Theory. I love Vince Staples. In some ways, he's sort of an outlier in current rap in some ways. What do you like about this specific album?
You know, the thing I love about the Vince Staples record is, you know, he was, you know, his last record was critically adored because it was this vivid look at his upbringing. And he comes back with an album that's almost nothing like that, but instead is mining the absolute vanguard of electronic music. He tweeted something recently about how, you know, Big Fish Theory should be nominated for, like, a Best Electronic Music Grammy. And it's like, it makes sense. Like, he really is tapping into the absolute cutting edge of electronic sounds and melding it seamlessly, not in a cloying, like, now I'm gonna make my Diplo record, drop it to the floor, y'all. Like, it really is like,
yeah, if he sounded like that, it would be really
bad. Oh yeah, no, it'd be terrible.
Terrible.
Yeah, no, it'd been really bad.
World's worst rapper.
Terrible. Yeah. What's that whole voice for 60 minutes? Terrible.
What song do you think we should hear from Vince Staples if you had to pick one?
Oh man,
is that too hard? Well, there's Yeah Right. There's a line from Kendrick where he says to Twilight the Zeitgeist.
Oh, I love
which
it.
Is, you know, so Kendrick can have one of the best lines on other people's records as usual. But I responded more immediately, like everyone else, or like more stereotypically everyone else, to the previous Vince Staples record. But it is cool to see him stretching out, and also for him to break away from the thing that everyone was obsessed with about him. But let's hear that one song. Yeah, right.
Is your house big? Is your car nice? Is your girl fat? Fuck her all night. Is your well paid? Are your shows packed? If your song played, what they know that? How to thug life? How to love life? How to work low? Is your buzz right?
Yeah, cool as hell.
You know, we could even use this, if you don't mind me sure. Segging.
Yeah.
You know, those types of sounds, those very, very glossy, high definition, virtual reality, you know, sometimes sort of uncanny valley sounds are really becoming very popular in the post internet post era. And it also segs into the Jay Lynn record, which I feel is the electronic record of the year, because she constructed a.
And that's Black Origami, and it's number 23.
Yes.
And that's for people, again, trying to find this stuff at home. It's J-L-I-N, and the album's called Black Origami, and has actually a picture of an origami elephant on it.
Yeah.
But yes.
But yes, you know, it's like she took those type of sounds and created her, you know, her own sound design with them, and then created this, like, insane, sputtering, broken, rhythmically convoluted typhoon of these sounds, and it's just a stunning thing to listen to. It's definitely it's my album of the year.
Let's hear something from them. I'm having a lot of trouble music supervising that. Where would that appear on? What would that be?
Black Mirror on Planet Zorp.
Perfect. Love it. So let's continue going down the list.
Aronofsky would love that. Aronofsky would find
it. Oh, yes.
For that.
Okay, while someone gets addicted to some weird future drug, they play that. Yeah, yeah. So 27 is Drake, More Life, which we've talked about extensively. Dolan's our big fan of that. And if you want to hear about that, go to our half year, best of the half year episode.
That's right.
Just stop listening to this. Go to that. Number 26 is Lana Del Rey's Lust for Life, which, okay, overall, I found this record a touch dull, which is a common, and Brittany, just shaking your head. I love Lana. With Lana in general, sometimes it's like you're either entranced or you're bored. I think there's very little in between. This time I was a little bored, but Brittany disagrees strongly.
I mean, especially after Honeymoon and Ultraviolence, which were very left field pop albums. Like, she was doing sort of this kind of like 60s like rock thing on Ultraviolence, and then Honeymoon was like much more kind of campy, like Valley of the Dolls-esque, and Lust for Life is very witchy pop. And I feel like this is her most straight up pop album since Born to Die.
Since the debut, yeah.
And even it goes even further. I mean, having, you know, A$AP Rocky on there, and like having these much more genuinely kind of hip hop leaning pop moments that I feel like she's grown a lot as an artist and a writer, where they feel a little bit more solid and even more current. And so it feels like a little weird to have after these really, really left field albums that she just had. So, but I enjoy a lot of the songs on here.
Fair enough. And again, it does get into social commentary, which is very unexpected, although sometimes it veers into unintentional self-parody when you have Lana.
Coachella.
Coachella, exactly. But then there's Paramore's After Laughter, which is another a great example of what Chris was talking about, which is a rock band really getting super rhythmic, super poppy. But I really liked a song called Forgiveness by Paramore, which was more, I believe, on the ballad end. So let's hear that song, Forgiveness. So that plays over the opening credits of like a romantic comedy. Anyway, so number 24 is Valerie June, The Order of Time, which is a really cool Americana album that I really liked. There's a song called Astral Plane on there that's really good. And we described it as woozy reverb and disarmingly tender flying on the ground vocals. But just generally, it's kind of like an an Americana thing with some unexpected stuff coming into it. I think were you a fan of that record?
I was. I just like that she seems to be kind of between every genre that's considered Americana. It's like there's R&B, there's country, there's soul, there's roots, there's folk. It's sometimes hard to tell which decade she's even kind of referencing or playing with. It's like such a unique sound, and her singing obviously is, it's completely its own style and sort of its own thing. She's just a really interesting artist.
Well, let's hear that one track.
Out of fear, from other worlds, but you can't say what keeps you dancing on the astral plane. Oh, a lot of plans and rain floating through the stratosphere.
So we'll jump to number 21, which is Jason Isbell and the 400 unit, the Nashville Sound. Do we have a fan of that here? Kind of dawn?
Kind of, yeah. I would say, definitely one of these, one of the, I guess, most articulate, interesting songwriters probably in Nashville, and also sort of just, again, like mining this kind of, like, there's a song where he just turns anxiety into an anthem. Another one of the, sort of just going into the sort of dark heart of Red Americans, some of these, and trying to really piece it together and figure it out. And it's a not a happy, not an upbeat record, but a really solid record.
It kind of reflects either like Trump voters or their neighbors who didn't vote for Trump. I think it's the neighbors of Trump voters.
Well, he can hang out with his neighbor, but it's like the stuff they just can't talk about.
Yeah, I mean, Jason is definitely not a Trump voter. I know that for a fact. But it's that neighborhood for sure.
Yeah,
it'd be worth hearing Cumberland Gap, which is a song about addiction from that record. A pretty timely thought. But it's Jason Isbell is just like that sort of it's down the middle. Root singer songwriter. So let's hear Cumberland Gap and then we'll move on to the next.
There's an answer here if I look hard enough. There's a reason why I always.
Too bad he never got to open for Tom Petty, actually. That would have worked really well. To my knowledge.
Yeah, there's a song in here that's like straight out of I forget which Eagles song, but he was in the Drive-By Truckers and he kind of, that's the same roots thing, but. And they're also doing a similar thing these days, kind of talking about the same problems with what's going on politically and socially in that part of the country. And he does it, I think, in a lot of interesting ways on this record, personally, and also kind of big picture.
And number 20 is SZA.
I've just been calling it Control.
Control.
I have no evidence, but I like to think
the computer keyboard, yeah.
Yeah, but an arch reference to the Janet Jackson album as well. Yeah.
Aha! Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. What do we like about this record?
I mean, this album, I feel like, is going to be. It presents the idea that this is going to be SZA's classic album to me in a lot of ways. Like, listening to it just feels so enduring, and I feel like I'm going to continue listening to it for years to come and look back at this moment and see kind of SZA take over R&B and pop over the next, 10 years. Like, I feel like we're going to be seeing her everywhere after this
may
album.
Prove to be a very influential album.
Yeah, this album for sure. I mean, if you look at the way that so many other R&B artists have responded to this and the way that she has kind of become so omnipresent in music because of this incredible writing, this incredible sound, it just feels so of the moment, but also it feels really enduring in a way that kind of transcends so many other albums to me.
And we should probably hear Drew Barrymore from that.
Why is it so hard to accept the party is over?
So we talked a little bit about St. Vincent before. St. Vincent is in number 18. We should also talk about number 19, which is Father John Misty, Pure Comedy. An album I like a lot. I don't think Brittany likes it all.
Nope.
I think it's a lot. It's a lot of lyrics. It's a lot. It's hard to listen to all in one sitting because it's like having someone like download a novel at you.
Yep.
Always the sign of a great album. Yeah.
But I think it's fairly brilliant and really interesting, and the combination of this sort of like really lulling roots rock combined with like absolutely mental lyrics is really fascinating to me. But we've talked about that before, so we'll agree to disagree on that one. Then St. Vincent, again, at number 18. Again, a sort of a rock person going pop, again, with the help of Jack Antonoff. So many trends in one record. And, you know, I might prefer earlier St. Vincent. I don't know. Does anyone prefer this St. Vincent to pre Antonoff?
I do. Vincent? Yeah. Yeah, I love this album. Yeah. I think that her vocals sound incredible. Everything about it just like coalesces really well. It's just very visceral and very powerful.
Happy Birthday, Johnny is a standout tune. It's probably worth hearing. What else do you like about that record?
I just found it such. I feel like she navigated moving to pop without losing any part of her sound. Like, I don't think there was anything lost from who she is or what we love about her.
What's your Happy Birthday, Johnny?
Remember one Christmas I gave you Jim Carroll, intended it as a cautionary tale. You said you saw yourself inside there. Dark yet
number 16 is Margot Price, All American Made. And is that a sweet spot for you, John?
Not super sweet, but I like it a lot. It's like kind of going back to like Loretta Lynn kind of era, early 70s classic kind of traditional country, and updating it. You know, you have a song like Pay Gap, and you have a song about the family farm, and you have a song, about trying to making it, and it's got a sort of feminist response to it's the feminist kind of side of the same thing Jason Isbell's talking about. I think it's a pretty good, she's only on her second record, and she made it a year after the first one, and she's already made two very good records pretty much out of the gate. So I think, I will go for that one.
And let's hear Pay Gap really fast.
Honey, I work so hard for my money, and I leave my babies at home, breaking my back trying to bring home a check, working my fingers.
Yeah, it's awesome. And number 15 is Courtney Barnett and Kurt Vile. And I love that these two made a record together. I love Kurt Vile. We all love Courtney Barnett. I love that it's Kurt and Courtney.
Yeah, it's great. It's hilarious.
It's just a great bonus. Yeah, I sort of wonder whether it's just like they just couldn't resist making a record together.
Like we have to do this.
We got to do it. It's awesome.
It's such a funny joke.
But it's sort of a delightful, just sort of like, I would say indie pop, except now when you say indie pop, it implies that it's a pop record, and actually it's an actual rock album.
It, they play guitars, they sing songs, all these retrograde things you're not supposed to do, they do them all. It's great.
There's a song called Continental Breakfast, which is a great one.
About their friendship, which the record's just mainly about them having a conversation about their music and their friendship and life, and it's just a great record to spend time just in listening to.
I'd be more into it if it was about the Key and Peele sketch.
They are. I've rarely seen an album cover where two people look more stoned. It's awesome.
It's totally true.
But what's their Continental Breakfast?
You won't believe what I could have told you, but I don't believe I've the balls to let you know.
I actually had it on a sort of like playlist next to a Margot Price song, and it just actually weirdly, it slides in bizarrely well, actually. And good sequencing on that one. And then number 14 is Waxahachie, Out in the Storm, and that's another great sort of indie rocky record. And we talked about Randy Newman at number 13. And we don't have a ton of like super veterans on here. And
there weren't a lot of veteran records this year, actually. It was kind of like a down year for vets.
And then we should talk about number 12, Jay-Z, versus number 9, Migos. Now, why, Chris, did we put the upstarts Migos above the legend Jay-Z?
Well, Jay-Z made a very honest, powerful record about his infidelity and where he fits in the world, and you know, there's a political edge to it.
Only one anti-Semitic line in the whole record.
Yeah, exactly. Really good.
It's a triumph.
But there's a couple of clunker lines in there. There's a couple of, his flow isn't exactly at volume 3 level right now.
It's dad rap.
It's dad rap. Yeah. And it's like, you know, I'm into it. Like, I love it. I think it's fantastic. But, you know, Migos basically made a Ramones record. They they went ahead and, you know, it's like 12 songs, all just giant bass, exuberant vocals. You know, obviously they're, you know, I mean, and they're incredibly gifted lyricists. And, you know, while they aren't plumbing the same depth.
Gifted vocalists, you mean, I think, right?
No, they're incredible lyricists.
Yes, and I'm sold. I mean, I thought it was interesting, and that album works as an album.
Every track on that is ridiculous, and it's gothy, it's dark, it's heavy, it's.
So we just have like 1 minute left, and we're going to blaze through the rest of the top 10. Sorry. So the number 11 is The National, which, you know, we've devoted a great episode talking to them about making this record. It's called Sleep Well Beast. I definitely recommend you checking out that episode. Find it on iTunes. Sam Smith at number 10. The Queens of the Stone Age at number 8. And that's a fun record. It is both a rock album and a pop album. Taylor, and again, an entire episode talking about Taylor's reputation. Go check that out. Khalid, American Teen, which is a super, super fun, unique record. And I definitely recommend checking that out. And number 5, LCD Sound System, American Dream, one of our American records. And Impeccable, one of those comebacks that's like they never left. Mm-hmm. In fact, they really didn't leave for that long.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, you have been listening to Rolling Stone Music Now. We have gone over the top 50 albums of the year, and thanks to Brittany Spanos and Chris Weingarten and John Dolan for being here. We'll be back next week at 1 p.m. here on Sirius XM's Volume, Channel 106. In the meantime, you can download us as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. You can and should subscribe to us as a podcast. And you can and should leave us some nice reviews, especially on iTunes. We actually read all the reviews, and it's been a couple weeks since someone said we should play longer clips of music, which is legally impossible, and every time I tell you that we cannot do that. So I don't even have to chide anyone this week, but I'm doing it anyway. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we will be back next week. I'm Brian Hyatt, and this was Rolling Stone Music Now.